We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
So what have you been up to for the past 3 or 4 days?
Well, I went with Anna Jacobson, who is Drip employee Fabulosa. We went to the Boundary Waters, which is this wonderful, amazing wild space right on the border of Minnesota and Canada. And so we have been canoeing and backpacking and out in the dirt for the last 4 days, and it has been absolutely delightful. Lots of beautiful water and clouds and sky, lots of quiet time, lots of good conversation, lots of good food cooked over a fire. So all the good camping things were there in really one of the most beautiful places I feel like I've been.
Yeah, it sounded pretty amazing. And I saw your pictures on Facebook, and just hearing kind of your stories about getting away and clearing your mind, it just sounds really appealing.
Yeah, I know we come back to this a lot in this podcast, but I have just found it over and over to be so helpful to have these experiences that break up the patterns and the rhythms of life. You know, I'm all for rhythms and patterns and schedules and consistency, but having a really clean break from those parts of life every now and then, I find to be really, really rejuvenating and powerful. It's sort of like a mini retreat. This wasn't like a technical retreat for me, but it really felt like stepping away from the day-to-day life to get some clarity and some kind of really deep rest.
Yeah. And it wasn't physical rest at all, right? Because you were, you know, sleeping on the ground, sleeping in the rain and carrying the kayak or the canoe. I guess there were places where there were too many rapids, so you have to get out and carry it for a half mile, lugging your gear. You're making your own food at night. I mean, it's just constant kind of physical activity. But the way you described it is it was mental rest.
Yeah, I think it was rest for my brain and maybe like the chance to use some physical intelligence or some kinesthetic intelligence. But my brain is nice and like relaxed, even though my body's sort of tired and sore.
Yeah, this ties into retreats. You know, as you said, this was kind of a mini retreat. It was more of just resting your mind. It wasn't necessarily a planning session. Like we often talk about how intense retreats can be and how much you're doing very deliberate thinking. And while this wasn't exactly that, I do think this kind of getaway, and whether, you know, for some people, maybe it is getting into a city and going and sitting at coffee shops. Maybe it's going to the beach, and maybe it's going, you know, to the Boundary Waters like you did, or going to the desert. I know some folks like that. So just giving your mind a rest can let there be room for new things to fill it. And if you are listening to this, thinking about going on a retreat, you wrote a book called The Zen Founder Guide to Founder Retreats. It's gotten, you know, sold quite a few copies, and it's gotten a lot of critical acclaim. And if you go to zenfounder.com and look in the upper right, there's a link to buy the guide. And I think, if I recall, it's like, I don't know, maybe $24. Is that right? On PDF?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds right. And it's short and sweet and concise.
Yep. Check it out if you haven't already.
So although I'm still kind of glowing from my time away, you know, it's Monday morning and I am confronting the much dreaded overly full inbox. And I'm having a lot of like email woe these days, not just after being gone for a weekend, but really feeling like I can't quite keep up with the email that I'm getting. And yeah, just like feeling bad about not responding in a timely manner and blah, blah, blah. So I thought it would be helpful for us to chat a little bit more about strategies for like having some email sanity. And one of the things that I really benefit from about some of the strategies that you use is it sounds like you have some ways of really putting boundaries around email and how often you're checking it, when you're responding. It sounds like, I know in the past you've felt like drinking from the fire hose kind of phenomenon with email, but lately you seem to feel a little bit more settled in your email strategies.
Yeah, I think they've evolved over time. And I think it depends on how much email you get. And I think during the course of kind of your career, or maybe depending on the phase that you're in, you're going to get more or less email. And so the strategies I've been working on lately have been to counter the sheer volume of email that I get these days. And I think having a system, I mean, my system is pretty basic. It basically, in Gmail, I have the inbox, and then I have two labels, and I have one that's underscore today, and then one that's underscore this week. The reason there's underscores there is it moves it to the top of the kind of the label list in Gmail. And I try to keep inbox zero, although I haven't been doing that. But basically, if something needs to be handled today, then it goes into the today. And if it can wait to a week, then it goes into this week. And this week is often stuff like I subscribe to certain forums and I want to participate in them, but I don't want to be kind of bothered by them every day. And then I'll go into my calendar and I block out an hour a week where it says check the this week folder and respond to all those things or participate in those. So I really kind of do that only once a week. So that's like a very simple way. There's obviously more exotic things. The nice part about that is you could, if you get enough email, you could hire a virtual assistant to then go in and do that. And I had an executive assistant who was doing that for me for quite some time before Drip was acquired. Actually, she was saving me hours and hours a week just going through my inbox so that when I showed up in the morning, the inbox was almost clean. And I knew I just had to go to the today folder. And I would start at the bottom with, you know, the oldest, and I would just make my way up.
That sounds like a really helpful system to have in place.
Yeah, because, you know, it's all it is very simple prioritization. Because that's a real problem with email, right? Is that there's no priority to anything. And so mixed in with, you know, something from your kid's teacher about that your son needs to wear something specific colors to school on Wednesday is an email from a job candidate who you've just interviewed asking for an update, and an interview perhaps from your boss or from an important customer asking for something specific. And some of these are 2-second responses and some of them are entire projects. And so when I go through email, the way I'm thinking about it, like as an example, you saw earlier today, we got something from one of our son's teachers and she said, he needs to wear this color or like, you know, the school's kind of shirt from the school on Wednesday. And so when I saw that, I thought, how can I get this out of my inbox? Because I don't want to look at this every day for the next 3 days, but have it essentially be reminded of it at the exact right moment when I need to put it into place. And so since it's for Wednesday, I thought sometimes we lay out the kids' clothes the night before. So I went into the calendar, 7:30 Tuesday night, and I put in a little thing that said, our youngest should wear XYZ on Wednesday. And then I invited you to it. And so now we're both going to get pinged on our calendar Tuesday night when we can actually take action on it. And now it's not sitting in my inbox and I don't have to think about it again.
Do you have a strategy about most important first, least important first? I mean,
I do. What I do is that first pass, which is just triage, if you have an executive assistant doing it, then he or she will prioritize for you. But if you don't, and you're actually going through, I basically use the rule of thumb. It's from that system getting things done, where it's like, if it's less than 2 minutes, then I do it now. And so that is an example of something that even if there's more important things above it, because I'm going in reverse chronological, right, from the oldest to the newest, and trying not to cheat and not allow yourself to go above that in your inbox. So you start at the very bottom, you open it up, and you say to yourself, is this going to take me less than 2 minutes? Then I should just do it now. If it's going to take me longer than 2 minutes, then it should either go in the this week or the today, or in some cases, if it's like a project or like another step of a project, I then put it in my Trello board, which is my to-do list that I come to once email's done. So then I would move up. And then if it's the teacher thing, I would put it in the calendar. And then if it's something where it's like someone reviewed today, they reviewed a job description that I had written. And so now I have to then kind of send an email to some people and explain it. And it's going to take me 15, 20 minutes to craft it and figure out who to send it to. So I threw that in my Trello board of like, send this to these people. It's just the next action step I can take.
So one of the things that I've observed about you lately is you're not doing a lot of email on your phone at all.
Yeah, that's right. I've really reduced the number of times in a day that I check email. And I know that, I mean, this is the advice everybody gives you, but being able to implement it is pretty hard, I found. But I actually deleted the Gmail app from my phone for a while, and now I have it on it again, but it's not on my home screen. It's way off in some folder on like the third screen over. And it's just enough friction that when I open my phone, instead of checking that, I'm kind of forcing myself to check other things or to turn a podcast on or turn music on or something. It's been an active decision. So yeah, I'm pretty rarely checking email on my phone. I'm letting people know that if something's urgent, and this is a communication thing. Like, I think if you're building your own company, you can set the standard and say, look, if things can wait 24 hours or even 2 days sometimes, like, email me. If something needs to be answered within an hour or two, Slack me. And if something needs to be answered like now, like it's holding someone up or there's an emergency, you can either Slack can sometimes work that way or like texting, because then I'm really going to know it's an urgent thing. And setting that up allows you to then realize if the servers go down, if things go sideways, I will get notified. And part of that is also then setting up monitoring for your servers. You know, if you're the technical one that's on the hook, is setting up Pingdom and PagerDuty and whatever, so that you do know that if you don't check email for 6 hours or 12 hours, that the emergency stuff will make it to you, that people will get in touch. And I really do try to check email. I try to do it twice a day. It winds up being more than that. I bet I check 4 times a day. I don't just make it a habit of having it be the first thing.
You do it at pretty strategic times.
Exactly. When I have time to deal with it, right? Because if you don't have time to deal with it or to get things done, then I think you're kind of wasting your time just to look through. It's like a check on Facebook or Twitter to see if there's anything interesting. If you're just looking in your inbox for something interesting, I kind of feel like that's just, it's just wasted time.
I think it also contributes to a lot of anxiety, because even if, you know, you're just sort of skimming through who's sending you something and what the subject is, but you don't actually have time to do anything about it or to triage or to respond to something brief, you're still carrying the knowledge of that email around in your head until such a time as you can actually do something about it. And I think that's like a little tiny, like, micro dose of anxiety that isn't helpful unless you actually have time to look at it thoroughly and do something about it.
Yeah, that's right. And I think another thing that can do that is when you have the alerts on, you know, where every email you get buzzes your phone and then you get to look at it. That's tough. I had that active at one point. I felt like it was pretty interruptive to my day. And so I've been trying to get, again, there are certain things you need to be aware of, like, hey, your server's down or somebody really needs to get a hold of you, but trying to move those towards other channels, like a Slack instant message, you know, or Slack DM or a text message, or like I said, PagerDuty hitting your phone. I mean, these are, I think, things that I would encourage folks to do if you do feel like you're either overwhelmed by the volume of email, you can use some of the organizational stuff I mentioned, or if you're overwhelmed by the anxiety and the constant, you feel like, yeah, just constantly finding out about email. It's probably because you're checking too often or you're letting there be notifications all the time, because you probably get between at least 30 to 50 emails a day if you're in any type of work environment, and you might get 2, 3, 4 times that. It's not uncommon if you're in kind of a high traffic thing dealing with a lot of people to see that many emails. So to have your phone buzz every time you get an email, it's distracting.
Yeah, I kind of stink at email, like, generally speaking, not only after I've been away for a weekend. I think part of it is because I kind of dabble in tech and I hang out with founders and with people who use email a lot. But as a psychologist, I don't actually use email very often. And so most of my day is spent in a context where I can't check email. You know, if I'm in a session with someone, I'm not going to check email. And I really like that undistracted, focused time with whoever I'm with, whether it's a client or a kid or you or a friend. But what that means is that my inbox sort of fills up and I just don't check it as often as I think other people do. So whereas I feel like the typical time of response to an email for other professionals is like an hour or two, my typical response time is like 3 to 5 days. Which, you know, any of you who have listened to this and who, you know, have gotten a really slow response from me, it's not personal. It's just the timeline that I'm on, which feels a little bit slower than the rest of the world.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're not on the computer all the time, like a lot of us. And so the computer is kind of maybe an afterthought, and getting into that inbox and clearing it out, and it feels like work. And I don't know that you necessarily have that much time or want to devote that much time to it. You know, if this afternoon you could go out for a bike ride, or you could get something done on the house, or you could paint some art versus sitting in your inbox, like, which of those is more important? I think that could be kind of a rhetorical question of, like, some days it is more important to get in there and dig into email if you're speaking at a conference and you need to get back to someone with something. But one of the problems with email is that it's basically a to-do list that anyone can put a to-do item on, right? People can add things to your to-do list just by emailing them in. And so that's where it breaks down.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm developing some skills at managing being bad at email. And I read this somewhere and I forgot where I read it. But to make the transition from saying thank you for your patience rather than I'm so sorry, it's taken me a week to respond. And it's a nuance, but, you know, generally I'm not actually sorry that it's taken me a week to respond. Like, it just is the timeline that I'm on. And I think it also affirms the other person, because really they have been patient and they are being kind by waiting for a response from me. So I like that little turn of phrase, and I've been using that in my delayed response emails lately.
Yeah. And it also sounds like, I mean, you were kind of mentioning earlier that you kind of feel guilty about the 3 to 5 day response times, but it actually probably doesn't matter, right? I mean, there's nothing that's like not getting done or that's falling over because you're not responding to someone for 3 or 4 days. It perhaps is just a guilty feeling. You feel like you're not, like you said, in sync with the rest of the world. So I think that maybe even is the first step, is kind of just letting yourself not respond sometimes for that long. I've done the same thing. Since I have stuff in the This Week folder, anytime I'm invited to speak on a podcast where I don't know the person, or there's a lot of stuff that goes into the This Week, or even that goes into the Today, and I don't actually get to it today, I get to it several days later. And I have stopped feeling guilty about it. And I think that's something interesting to think about, is like there are certain things that really do need replies quickly, and a lot of things they just can wait and it doesn't matter. And to sort of feel okay about that and not be hung up that you aren't responding for such a long time. And then saying thank you instead of sorry, because like you said, you aren't actually sorry. That's just the system you have and it's the way that you work.
One of the other things that I do sometimes, I know that this doesn't work for everybody or in every context, is if it's just been like kind of a ridiculous amount of time since I have responded to an email, like if I'm moving on to 2 or 3 weeks, I might just pick up the phone and call that person. Because there's something in that email that's like, there's a barrier that I'm having in responding in a timely manner. It's either too many questions in the email, it's too long of a response. I feel like it's going to take too long to craft a thoughtful response. And at that point, once it's like 2 or 3 weeks, I kind of get the sense that I need a different mode of communication. And I will just pick up the phone and call them. And if it's a complex conversation, we can have it verbally, which I think is easier. Or if it's just an email that had a lot of different points or topics that needed to be addressed, then I feel like I can do that much more effectively on the phone. I realize that doesn't work in every situation. There are certainly times where it's really helpful to have a complicated conversation in writing. But if I'm really pushing that 2 to 3 to 4 week boundary, then it's clear to me, or that's just a cue to me, that I need to approach whatever this topic is in a different way.
Yeah, I think that's a really good piece of advice. It's like thinking about the medium or the method of your communication, because email is sometimes the best method, but sometimes it's not. And the phone can get a lot more done in a lot shorter time than sitting there typing text. I think another thing to think about, this was like a big mental shift for me, and it happened about 2 years ago. This idea of kind of email minimalism, which is to respond as if you were on like a mobile phone, even if you're on your laptop. And I used to write these big, long emails, whether it was outbound or in response. I would say, hey, so-and-so, thank you very much for emailing. I really appreciate your blah, you know, and your compliments. Here are my thoughts on this, a bulleted list. And everything would take, let's say a minimum response was 5 minutes, even if it was pretty short off the top of my head. I have made a transition to really like using keyboard shortcuts for one on a laptop, because you can get way, way faster at it. But then even while I'm typing, like, if someone emails me and says, hey, Rob, I saw this interview and I have a couple questions for you, sometimes I'm not able to answer those at all anymore. But if I am, it'll typically be a reply. I won't say any type of like niceties that the person doesn't care about anyways. I will just start responding and basically try to do it in as few sentences as possible. And oftentimes I'll refer them to something. Hey, this answers your question. See this blog post or see this video. And I was kind of made aware of this. There's this whole concept of like 3 sentences, 4 sentences, 5 sentences, meaning trying to make all your responses is that much or less. And we'll put a link in the show notes, but it's five.sentence.es. And I've also seen the 4 sentence.es and 3 sentence.es. And it's kind of the idea of an email charter of basically saying like, look, let's just try to make emails less complicated, make both the reading and the responding to them quicker. And I found that it has dramatically impacted the amount of email that I can send and respond to. And I still get basically the same message across. The emails may be a little more terse, you know, there are not quite as many niceties, like if I was writing out a full letter to someone, but I do feel like it allows me to crank through a lot more. You can't do this in every situation, right? You can't write this to your boss or to a potential acquirer or something. Like, you have to be a little more formal in certain situations, but for the most part, I found that taking this approach has been pretty helpful. There's another link. It's at emailcharter.org, and that all ties in with email minimalism.
And our friend Chris used to have both of these links in his signature for his email. He just included in every email like a little bit of a commentary about his philosophy of email by including these links, which I found really helpful. It sort of put out there, hey, this is how I understand this medium, and this is how you can interpret the length and the content here. I think that I would like to take back a little bit of the communication space from email. I feel like it's become a little bit too invasive in my life, or maybe in life in general. And finding a way to communicate with the people that you're often interacting with, sort of your philosophy about email, I think is really helpful. So whether that's something in your signature line or an autoresponder. I know you had one up for a while that would say, I typically check email twice a day or something like that. But it really kind of outlined for whoever is in contact with you what they can expect from you in terms of timely communication and the way that you address email.
Yeah, setting an expectation like this is fine. I think it's not a big deal. I know that several years ago, I think it was before Hittail, when I was just working a lot less when our littlest was just born, I had an autoresponder like this that basically said, yeah, I check email every couple days or something like that. Or maybe it was like, I check email once a day and I'll probably respond to you within 2 or 3 days. And I found that it was helpful just to set expectations. I don't think you're in a role where people should demand or expect you to respond within 6 hours, like as if you were, you know, working in an office or something like that. So I think this is a good idea.
It has been interesting as I've begun to do more and more consulting with founders that I find the difference in the general sort of founder sense of email timing and my email timing to be a little bit different. Like, it just takes me a little bit longer, I think, than most people expect. So if you are reaching out to me for consulting or any other thing and I take a couple of days to respond, it's not that I don't care or I'm not going to respond. I just am on a different time schedule than some folks.
And if you find you get value from this podcast, we have a way to help support us. If you go to supportzenfounder.com, that'll take us to our Patreon. And what a Patreon is where you can pledge, you know, either a one-time or a recurring amount to help us keep producing the show. And we have costs, hosting costs. We have an editor and trying to make a couple of goals to kind of up the game and improve the amount of time that we can invest in the show. So if you find you get value out of it, head over to supportzenfounder.com and give it a look.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.